It has been an absolutely wild 24 hours on the recruiting trail for Ohio State as the Buckeyes look to navigate what has become one of the most tumultuous signing days in recent history for Ohio State. I'm Jeremy Birmingham. This is Talking Stuff on 97.1 The Fan. I'm going to be joined by Letterman Row's Mick Walker. We're going to talk about everything that Ohio State is dealing with right now on the latest edition of Talking Stuff. Let's get to it. Mick Walker from Letterman Row joins us now on Talking Stuff, 97.1 The Fan. Mick, we both went into Wednesday morning with an expectation that Ohio State signing day was going to be somewhat drama-free. That was the message we've received on Tuesday night. That was the message we'd received for the days leading up to Tuesday. And boy, oh boy, it has turned into anything other than that for a number of reasons. First and foremost, of course, is the departure of Brian Hartline, which is not altogether surprising. It's not really a shock that Brian Hartline is sought after by other schools. It's not a surprise that Brian Hartline felt the need to make a move that will give him an opportunity to become a head coach somewhere and see where his career can take him. But obviously the timing, and we'll dive into all of the potential repercussions for that as we talk about stuff on this episode of Talking Stuff. But 10 a.m. on Wednesday morning, 30 minutes before Chris Henry and his teammates at Mater Dei High School in Santa Ana, California, are set to have a signing day press conference where they are all meant to sign their letters of intent or contracts with the Big Ten or their scholarship agreements, whatever those things are called now. And then the Brian Hartline news breaks, and so does everything else. So what was your first thought when that happened yesterday morning?
Oh, I have to go send a newsletter. That's the immediate work thought because we have a lot of stuff going on. Spencer obviously had it covered. Austin had it covered when it comes to just the actual coverage of it. But then we sat there and thought about it. I think Jaden Ricketts might have been the most recent signee that was announced right before the Hartline news broke. I was originally kind of planning to be out there at Watkins to see his signing. Would have been nice to catch up with him immediately after to see where his head's at. But, and then now you just see the fallout. I think we were both fully expecting Chris Henry Jr. to sign with Ohio State coming into the day. I think we were both fully expecting that Jaquaydon Guilford was going to be pretty much a rocking chair easy type of thing. It was going to be open and shut case. And now I believe that one is done, at least as we kind of head into it. But we're still waiting on that signature, and now there's predictions for Chris Henry Jr. to flip to Oregon, and I think you've reported that while those are in, nothing's kind of been decided, or Ohio State hasn't really been informed either way. But yeah, it just has immediately shifted and kind of thrown everything on its head after you wrote a byline that said, or a headline that said, drama-free signing day.
Well, I said expected drama-free, didn't I? Or should be drama-free? I don't know. It doesn't matter. It wasn't drama-free. Things got wonky real quick. But it wasn't just the wide receivers, but that's where we're going to have to talk. Even with Brian Hartline's news not happening on Wednesday, Ohio State was going to lose Caden Dixon Wyatt, the four-star wide receiver from California. He had told the coaching staff on Monday that he was going to be heading to USC. That was not a surprise. The rest of the stuff that happened after, in a five-man recruiting class at wide receiver, you had, of course, Brock Boyd and Jaden Ricketts, who signed. Brock Boyd was pretty vocal on Twitter and social media on Wednesday night saying that, you know, just because Brian Hartline's not there doesn't mean the wide receiver U was slowing down or anything like that. But the two guys that Ohio State's really had penciled in as the difference makers, the early difference makers here in this class of 2026 at wide receiver were Chris Henry Jr., the nation's number one ranked receiver, according to Rivals, and Jaquaydon Guilford, who Ohio State has believed from the jump is a player that was going to be a major steal in this class. So with Chris, I mean, it's now, as we record this, it's Thursday, it's 3:18 p.m. Ohio State, from my last contact with people in the WAC, was that the Buckeyes are still fighting. There is obviously a large financial component to this. It's Oregon is very good at playing that game. They understand that there are things they can do or that they will do that are not necessarily all about upfront money. But when it comes down to it, The Ducks are finishing the calendar year of 2025 in a very similar way to the way that they started it, which is just trying to buy Ohio State receivers because they fell short back in January with Carnell Tate, and we'll see if it falls short today. There was a number of crystal ball predictions of recruiting insider predictions, RPMs, whatever they're called, that shed some light on where those guys think things are heading. But I can't help but feel like all of that conversation, all of the sourcing is coming from the Oregon side. And so it is not a media group or a coaching staff that lacks for confidence at all. They are bold. They are very, very confident in what they do. I'm not saying they're going to be wrong. I'm saying that as we sit here at 3:20 p.m., I was told about 40 minutes ago, Ohio State does not think it's over. They do not think it's done. They are continuing to fight. By the time this episode airs, maybe it's over. But the latest up-to-the-minute reporting from the Ohio State side is that Chris Henry Jr. is still in conversation with the Buckeyes. His agents are still in conversation with the Buckeyes. And there's obviously an entire family component to this, Mick. It's not like it's just Chris Henry Jr. His sister plays basketball at Ohio State. His younger brother is a highly sought-after 2027 basketball prospect that has offers from Ohio State and Oregon. You can't help but wonder if Nike is playing a long game here with the whole family, or if they're trying to turn the whole family into Ducks by bringing Chris along with a very, very generous financial offer. Again, but Ohio State's not asking him to play for free. So it's easy to understand why Chris Henry would have taken a step back on Wednesday morning and said, hey, I need to cool my jets here. Let me take in this news. There's confusion out there about exactly how the timeline of things went down. And that's where I think clarification is really, really needed, but almost impossible to get. Because from what I was told on Wednesday, Ohio State staff members started trying to reach out to Chris on Tuesday night about midnight Eastern time, which would be 9 p.m. on the Pacific coast. And Chris is notoriously difficult to get on the phone. And that was the case even for Brian Hartline. But he did not answer the phone when he was called and did not respond or read text messages. And his agent, however, from what I understand, what I was told was that there was a conversation with his agent, David Mugaleta, I don't know how to pronounce his last name.
Mulugeta,
at about 6 a.m. Eastern time on Wednesday morning, which would be 3 p.m. or 3 a.m. Pacific Coast time. I actually heard, I mean, this is just the way this business goes. I heard that his agent was actually in Las Vegas on a little bit of a break. So we'll see what that means. But there was certainly contact initiated by Ohio State. I have no way of knowing for sure if Chris just chose not to respond to things because he was waiting until the morning till he got to school to make his announcement or whatever. But now the Buckeyes are just in a holding pattern. And I think you can tell me if you agree or disagree, Mick, but like the longer it goes, the better it is for Ohio State. But it seems like it's an Ohio State and Oregon fight, despite USC and then Texas initially making some noise by trying to muddy the waters.
I tend to agree with you on the idea that the longer it goes, and you and I even texted about that this morning. It's just, there's so many relationships he has, whether that, even though Brian Hartline is leaving, Keenan Bailey, Devin Jordan, Ryan Day, Mark Pantone, you go on and down the list of like the people in the building in Columbus. And then, like you said, his sister, I believe it's Sienna or Sienny, is on the roster there at the women's basketball.
Mick, I'm going to ask you to hold on for 1 second. I have an important phone call I have to take, so please hold. Okay, Mick, I didn't mean to interrupt you there, but let's just call it what it is. We're trying to do this. This isn't a live show, but things are happening live as we are approaching things. And at this point, conversations being what they are, I fully expect now that Oregon will be the team to sign Chris Henry Jr. And as I mentioned, the amount of money that's being talked about here is not the problem for Ohio State. Let's be clear. It is that amount of money for a player that has not played college football, who is not named Jeremiah Smith. And in the situation being what it is, the long time commitment, the impact that Ohio State has had with Chris's family, the fact, as you mentioned, that his sister's there playing basketball at Ohio State, you are not looking for a discount if you're Ohio State, but you are hoping for some reasonableness. And the truth is right now, without a wide receivers coach at Ohio State, and if Chris feels in any way that he was not given a heads up, or Ohio State didn't do right by him and his family by calling him ahead of time when the Buckeyes didn't find out about Brian's decision until midnight on Tuesday, I don't know that there's really any fault to be laid here. I know that there will be a segment of the fan base that demands that Ohio State always pays everyone the top dollar. But the amount of money that Ohio State was offering was extremely generous. And from my understanding, more than they've put on the table for any player that was not Jeremiah Smith for a true freshman coming into the program. So you are now in this position where you have to watch him go to Oregon. That seems like it's going to happen. I won't be surprised if it has officially happened by the time this hits the airwaves. But the point is, Ohio State's going to move on from Chris Henry Jr. and they will attack the transfer portal in a way that they haven't done under Brian Hartline at wide receiver. That's going to be the interesting thing. There is no hurry in Columbus to find a wide receivers coach because – The transfer portal doesn't open until January 2nd, and the Buckeyes, believe it or not, despite the fact that everyone thinks tampering is just something that is happening all the time everywhere, the Buckeyes can't talk to these receivers anyway. So names out there, guys like Cam Coleman, guys like Ryan Williams, even guys like Nick Marsh, who have announced that he intends to enter the transfer portal, the Buckeyes can't talk to him until January. So as long as the program continues to do what it's done, I think it will be very, very attractive for wide receivers around the country to see an opportunity to come in and play in that offense next year with Julian Sayin on behind center and Chris Henry or Jeremiah Smith on the other side. It just will not be Chris Henry. And we're going to have to move on from that because there are other things happening in the world of recruiting that don't involve receivers. And it's disappointing. And I understand people are going to be mad about it. And I know I'll be called a homer or scarlet colored glasses, but I don't think Ohio State's wrong. I think that there has to be a limit. I think that there has to be a spot you just don't go. And it is difficult to maintain the soul of the program and the culture of the program when every year this is going to happen. Because until there are guidelines, until there are rules in place for what NIL actually is, and we're still living in this world where like kids are supposed to have legitimate job purposes for the money they're receiving, I don't know how Oregon can pay him that amount of money, knowing that they're only going to have $20 million for revenue sharing to split amongst their football team if you're giving an incoming freshman more than a tenth of that. It just doesn't make sense. So that money's coming from somewhere else, and it will be up to the College Sports Commission and the people in charge of college football to figure out a way to put guardrails and guidelines in place that keep this from going out of control. But that's whatever. We're going to get off that soapbox because it's irrelevant. Bottom line, Chris Henry Jr. looks like he's going to be going to Oregon. Sorry, that's unfortunate. And I'm sorry for the weird editing that you're going to see on this episode of Talking Stuff, but that is life. Mick, let's talk about Legend Bay because this is the weirdest thing that's maybe one of the weirder recruitments we've covered in a few years. I mean, this is a guy that had been committed to Tennessee since June. He took an official visit to Ohio State in October or November? November 1st. Takes his official visit, flips to Ohio State a few days later. No signs of drama, no signs of discontent at all. Then Wednesday morning, his contract, his agreement with the Big Ten did not come in as expected. And what we were told, and you know, I'll let you speak on it, that we were told that Ohio State had received a signed document from Legend that the Buckeyes basically discarded and said, you know, they declined it because they knew that there was some issues inside of the family about trying to make sure that everyone was on board with the choice. There has been a lot of discussion in the last 24 plus hours about the family dynamics that are occurring with Legend Bay, his mother, and whether or not he was doing what she wanted, whether or not she was just making the decision, whether or not he had actually made the decision. Then there's quotes from Legend to websites about, you know, why he made the decision and talking about Brian Hartline's departure and all this stuff. And then on Thursday afternoon, there are back-to-back tweets from Legend Bay's account that got deleted. One of them, a picture of basically Ryan Day and Carlos Lachlan with a football player whose name said Bay on the back with a logo that said, "We've got your back." And then there was another one, and I'm just going to read it because I don't want to put it on the video because I think it's not really necessary. But let me find it here on the LettermanRow.com message board. If you're not a subscriber at Letterman Row, it has been a pretty crazy day.
I have it right here. You want me to read it? Or
yeah, go ahead. Go ahead.
Just, good afternoon. I was just recently logged out of my IG and will probably be logged out of this account as well by my older brother who has access to my account because I won't be signing to the school him and my mother once, Legend Bay, that has since been deleted. That was posted what around like 1:20, 1:30-ish. It's we're now recording about 2 hours later, and it's like you said, it's been deleted. You and I talked to full story about 24 hours ago, a little less from when that post was tweeted. We were walking out of the Woody Hayes Athletic Center. You were walking with Austin to record snap judgments of the daily for the following day. I was walking with Spencer out of the car to go get lunch with him. And we stopped and talked to somebody in the middle of the Woody Hayes Athletic Center. And it was just kind of like, hey, is that one going to get done? Because there was confidence in the Woody Hayes Athletic Center that they were going to be able to hold on to him despite some kind of final pushes from Tennessee and West Virginia that were trying to get in there. And they told me unequivocally, yes, we actually think that one will get done, and it'll get done today. Because the Rivals are on threes. Pete Nako said reported he was going to push it until Friday. That one, they were told that it was going to get done yesterday. And then all of a sudden, we came back in for the nighttime press conference, lightning round, and he had already signed with Tennessee. So then you and I catch up with the same group of people later that night afterwards, and that's kind of when the whole he did sign with us because we knew his mom would not let him sign off on the second half of it. We released him. He then signs with Tennessee, and now there's the whole debate of whether he gets released again, and they have to kind of balance the structure of the Bay family and what's going on there.
So, I mean, that is the cliff notes. It is crazy. I mean, it's a totally crazy situation, but it's not unprecedented. We have seen in the past players who had differences of opinion with their family members about where they're supposed to go. And before we really dive into the chaos of it all, I think it's important to state that, like, if I feel awful for Legend and his family, because you really would love for there to be alignment in these decisions. Now, the fallout of that is yet to be determined. Mike Roach from 247 Sports, who covers Texas, does a really good job there. Posted a story about 45 minutes ago saying that he's going to be attempting to get released from his national letter of intent or his contract with Tennessee, and it will be up to Tennessee to do that. So now, who knows where that goes from here? And the bottom line is that Legend Bay, if he would have waited until his birthday on December 24th and not signed anywhere on Wednesday, he could come to Ohio State without his parental sign off. That's not the case at this juncture. So whatever is going on in that family, again, I feel bad for them. I think it's an awful situation. I think it's really unfortunate. The reality is Ohio State wants him in this class. And he is going to have to make a decision, because when you lose Chris Henry Jr., when you lose Caden Dixon Wyatt, while Legend Bay is being recruited as more of a hybrid athlete, a running back, quarterback, wide receiver, return guy, everything, it was not a situation where they really thought, like, hey, this guy can play wide receiver for us, or he needs to play receiver for us. It was more like, hey, there's ways to use him. And when I talked to him about a month ago, he did mention the Tyreek Hill type of player that could just be used in the backfield and be doing a lot of things. So I don't doubt for a second that the Brian Hartline news was a bit of a shock. And if there was a sense or a search from other members in the family to give a reason why, hey, maybe you shouldn't go to Ohio State, and this just validates our feelings, I can understand if that was used as ammunition in the conversation on Wednesday. And this is me totally speculating, and I want to be very clear, because that's what we do. This we're just talking stuff. And if I'm going to speculate, I'm going to tell you we're speculating. I wonder, based on the deleted Twitter messages, the comments from Legend Bay's account. This is going to sound crazy, so I want to be, and I'm going full tinfoil hat here, okay? I don't know for sure, and I haven't reached out to the Tennessee sites that had quotes from Legend in the last day. I do wonder if some of those maybe were accrued or gathered via social media, and maybe it wasn't Legend himself responding to them if he's saying that his brother or other people who wanted him at Tennessee had access to the accounts. Now, again, that's completely speculation. I know on the flip side of that, there's going to be speculation that he was hacked, or that he was trolling or whatever, or that some people have posited that it wasn't that he wanted to go to Tennessee and that it was his brother tweeting. And so, like, oh, there's all of these things that ways this could go. But the reporting, both from Mike Roach of 247 Sports, or 24/7 Sports, however you call it, and Sam Spiegelman from Rivals in the last few moments, has been pretty clear that Legend Bay is not content with what happened on Wednesday, and that he is trying to find a way to get back into the Ohio State recruiting class. Would you say that's a fair read on this, Mick, or not?
Very fair read. And I went back and double checked, because I thought I had heard, when checking more about the Legend Bay recruitment before he initially committed, I thought I remember somebody mentioning his mom, like, this has been an ongoing issue. I think Ohio State knew and felt as though they had kind of gotten everything smoothed over, and then obviously this pops up again on signing day. So now you continue to work through it. And you and I had talked on Wednesday night. It was like, do you think there's a chance he ends up back in the class? And at that point it was no, probably not. This morning you said, we talked again, and it was like, I don't think so, but I mean, this recruiter, we can't really rule it out. And now I think we would both say if things continue to trend the way that they have been recently, it feels like he does end up back in the Buckeyes class and pairs, whether that's with Favor Aki at running back or Brock Boyd and Jaden Ricketts at wide receiver. Like at that point, that might, he might honestly be best suited to, he might be best suited to add to that room because what they might need this cycle. So who really knows, but I do think this is a player that Ryan Day and Carlos Lachman both really wanted. And truthfully, it was a player that I really wanted to ask Ryan Day about on Wednesday. It was on our sheet for questions that we, you and I were talking through. Sadly, his agreement was in at that point, so we didn't get to talk about it, but yeah, that's kind of where the recruitment's at right now for Legend Bay.
It's one of the wilder situations that's ever involved Ohio State. And even in this space, it only peripherally involves Ohio State because the Buckeyes are just kind of sitting back going, what are we supposed to do? I guess we'll find out. It's something that could be resolved today. It could be resolved by the weekend. It might not be resolved until January 2nd if Tennessee doesn't allow him the opportunity to be released from his agreements. Because on January 2nd, he can just enter the transfer portal and go that route if that's what he wants to do. At that juncture, he'll be 18 years old and can do whatever he wants. So this is a very all over the place show right now, and I apologize for that. But again, when you're in the middle of this stuff as it's happening, it can be hard to keep up on. That doesn't mean that everything on Wednesday was bad, okay? So let's break it down. Ohio State went into the day on Wednesday with 28 commitments. They signed 25 of them. They lost Caden Dixon Wyatt. They're going to lose Chris Henry Jr. And they lost Legend Bay, who they may still end up bringing back into the mix. That would bring them to 26. And then the Buckeyes added Caden Gebhardt, the 2026 three-star safety from Olin Tangi High School in Lewis Center. He's a teammate of CJ Santa, committed to Clemson since March. He flipped to the Buckeyes, big body, strong, kind of a like a box safety, someone that maybe develops into a hybrid Will linebacker type as well. He does a lot of things that Ohio State really likes. His tape is really good, man. Like if you watch Olin Tangi play, you are not going to have a tough time locating Caden Gebhardt on the field. He is a physical run stuffing guy who just hits. Now, athletically, is he on the same level as Simeon Caldwell or Blaine Bradford, who will be joining him in the safety room at Ohio State to start their careers? No, probably not. But it is a reminder in the expanding era of college football rosters, in this NIL era, Mark Piantoni said it on Wednesday, like they can't take Ohio kids for granted in the NIL era. And I think that there is a sense that maybe back in the spring that occurred, mostly because of the coaching change when Jim Knowles left Ohio State and Matt Patricia came in. There wasn't an expectation for Matt Patricia to really be involved in recruiting at that point. Matt Guerrieri already had his list of guys that he was really dialed into. And so he was focusing on those players, and Caden Gebhardt kind of got lost in the wash. But it's funny story. And Mick, I know that Caden confirmed this with you in a roundabout way, that Ryan Day really was the one that was driving this recruitment in the last month of bringing him back into the mix. From what I heard, is that it was actually Caden Gephardt's mother who ran into Ryan Day's wife at like a local event for football. And it was mom who said, hey, you know, we would like to have a conversation if it's possible. And then all of a sudden things really picked up. That started about 3.5 weeks ago. You and I talked about it privately, and I had asked Caden a couple of times. I said, hey, I'm hearing this is going on. Can you just tell me what you feel about it? Is this interest you really have? And Caden told me, if Dabo Swinney is at Clemson, I'm going to be at Clemson. And I said, okay, well, and then I asked CJ Santa, and CJ said that Caden told me this is what he wants. And so what it really came down to, I think, in the last couple of weeks was the notion that Mickey Kahn, the longtime safeties coach at Clemson, may be on his way out the door there. He's not necessarily been outright dismissed or fired, but similar in ways to like what happened with Ohio State and Ed Warner a few years ago when he left Ohio State to become the offensive line coach at Minnesota after being the offensive coordinator in Columbus. Sometimes when you have a lot of respect for a coach and you're the head coach, you say, hey, I think it's best you find another job. So there's discussion out there from the Clemson site on 3 Network that Mickey Kahn will become the defensive coordinator at Samford. which to me is a, it's basically like, we're not going to fire you, but you can't work here anymore type of conversation. And I think that really opened the door as Matt Patricia and Ryan Day and Matt Carrieri circled back and brought the wagons around for Caden Gephardt, who became commitment number 28 again at that point. And if Jerquaden Guilford and his signature is official, which it is not yet, from what I understand, and if Legend Bay were to come back into the fold here for Ohio State, then you're back to 27 commitments in the class, which would still be the highest number of prep signees Ohio State has signed in the internet recruiting era. And that's it. So it's been an interesting couple of days. There has been a lot of stuff going on, and I'm talking a lot, man. I'm talking a lot.
Yeah.
Tell me what you think. Tell me what I'm missing here, Mick, because I know you're as dialed into any of this stuff as I am.
You originally caught wind of this, I believe, a couple of weeks ago. Like you said, you said, hey, I think there might be a guy that's checking back in on. That was Caden Gephardt. We dug back through it. Like you said, Caden didn't really, and he even said this when I talked to him on Sunday night. Full transparency here, because we're a pro transparency podcast. Caden wanted to call both Burham and I on Sunday night, but Burham was doing his karaoke thing. So luckily I got the call from Caden. And that's when we kind of hashed out some of this. And he said he didn't want to text you and I back because he didn't want to really want to lie to us in that situation. He just didn't really talk about it. So he kind of played it off. And then Sunday, obviously, they gives us a couple days heads up. That's when he told me, and I said, hey, I know you know. So, and then the other layer of this is Ryan Day's son, RJ Day, was originally, I believe, in the Olentangy school system before he ended up going to St. Francis de Sales for high school. And there, he's obviously a class below Caden and CJ Santa. So Ryan has known about the Gephardt family and known of the Gephardt family, and they've been around each other, like you mentioned, since for probably, what, 5, 6, 7, 8 years now. I don't know really what the number would be, but they're very familiar with each other. So that's why, like you said, when Caden's mom runs into Nina Day, whether it's an event or a grocery store, whatever the situation may be, these conversations kind of get stimulated with Ryan, and then it goes up to the top, and Ryan says, you know what, we can take as many good Ohio high school football players as we can. And that's when you get the pressure that he kind of cooked up for Caden Gephardt. The more interesting thing for me is, and this is not related to the recruitment, I think he's a good player, and I think he could do good things at Ohio State, is when his graphic got posted with Hayes Fawcett, it was with a photo of him in an Ohio State jersey. And yeah, to my knowledge, unless it happened at some point this weekend, it very well could, that he has not taken an official visit to Ohio State at any point. So I don't know if he just popped up in there. I think you have to be on an official visit to take those photos now. So that was more fascinating to me to see. But again, Caden's a good player, and that's kind of the backstory of how he goes from not really on the board to on, like, in the class, really, with Ryan Day kind of orchestrating and puppeteering the whole thing.
Yeah, and maybe it's just a really good Photoshop by Hayes. I don't know. Anything's possible. We are in a different era than we've ever been in college football, and Ohio State is trying their best to keep up with everything. And again, the Buckeyes do a really, really great job of finding kids and families that are drama-free. And on an episode like this, which is obviously a lot of speculation and rampant rumors and interruptions from phone calls, et cetera, that doesn't mean there weren't guys who should be noted for being drama-free. And I think that, the recruitment of Favor Aki is one to me that I think is, should stand out. This is a guy who committed to Ohio State in June when the Buckeyes were looking at a handful of other, like, high-profile national targets at running back. He committed, and the Buckeyes said, hey, you know what, we're going to back out. We're fine with just Legend. And then in October, they start looking at Amari Latimer, who ended up signing with West Virginia instead of Wisconsin on Wednesday. And then they bring in Legend Bay. And then, you know, Favor did not have a really great senior season because of injury. And that's a guy that could have looked a different direction and said, hey, maybe I'm being overlooked. Maybe the Buckeyes don't think I'm the guy. And he didn't do that. Luke Fahey, the quarterback, who certainly the minute that a quarterback is offered by and committed to Ohio State, everyone in the country is going to start reaching out again if they need a quarterback. And I'm sure Luke had opportunities to make a lot more money going elsewhere. The entire offensive line group, the five signees that Tyler Bowen brought in his first recruiting class, especially Sam Greer, Max Riley, those guys at the start who got offered as freshmen and never wavered. And even though they didn't commit as freshmen, everyone knew where they were going to go, and they never looked another direction. Landry Breed and Mason Wilhelm, who flipped in this cycle for Ohio State, and of course Tucker Smith, who Ohio State believes is their center of the future. None of those guys ever looked in a different direction. They all wanted to be Ohio State and nothing else. And on the defensive line, even guys like Emmanuel Ruffin, who, you know, he wanted to commit to Ohio State in June and didn't have the opportunity then, and took an opportunity to commit to Colorado. When the Buckeyes came back, he immediately came back and said, hey, this is where I want to be. You know, Dre Quinn, who you've talked about a lot, and the culture fit and the personality fit in these last couple of weeks with Texas and Miami still pushing, makes no bones about where he wants to be. And to me, the most important guys in the class outside of the Chris Henry discussion has been and will continue to be Jordan Thomas and Jay Timmons, who might be, you know, as far as the national rankings go, that twosome is as good as you can get nationally at corner in this class. Jay Timmons, the number one ranked cornerback in the country, according to Rivals industry rankings, according to Rivals rankings, not the industry rankings, but like these kids had opportunities to go anywhere. And as Mark Pantone said on Wednesday, Ohio State never wants to be the highest bidder. They don't want that. They are not going to, they're not being cheap. And I hate that narrative, but they also are making sure these kids understand that there's value beyond just the money they're getting up front. And, you know, there's a lot of these kids who deserve a lot of credit.
And again, assuming they do lose Chris Henry Jr. like we're expecting, I understand it loses like the star power. I think that would leave them with no like Rivals industry ranking five stars in this class and probably drop them out of the top five. But when you go position by position, especially if Jaquaden Guilford signs in this class, and then potentially you can add Legend Bay, and there's no real holes. And there's a lot of blue chip talent in this class. And it's a lot of guys that have been invested, like you said, drama free. And like the antithesis of this whole talking point was kind of Berm asked somebody on Tuesday when we were in there, hey, do you guys have any surprises or anything of note coming that's affiliated with the defensive line room? And they said, nope, drama free for us. And what actually turned out being was the defensive line and the offensive line were both, they got their 11 signatures in, and there was never an idea of like, oh, Darius McKinley's going to take it until Thursday, or like he's going to take it until Friday. And then Blaine Bradford, like he never visited LSU. I do think he went to an LSU game at some point this season to be in the stands with his parents and watch his brother Jacob. But like all those safeties, all the, like you mentioned, those defensive backs, the linebacker, like all the linemen, they were all drama free. And you have to appreciate those guys as much as you, worry about any of the guys that could flip away from this class. I appreciate the guys that kind of stayed solid, because at the end of the day, as our guy Adam King would say, like the guys that come to Ohio State, those are the ones that you actually get to follow and cover and we'll get to like worry about now. And I guess you can dislike Chris Henry Jr. from afar, but Ohio State will find somebody to replace whatever role that Chris Henry Jr. is going to provide, whether that's in this class or 2027 or whatever it may be. So just enjoy the drama free guys at this point, now that we've gotten through all the drama that has happened so far.
Yeah, and if you really take a step back and consider how this played out over these last 36 hours, if Brian Hartline doesn't announce or have it announced at 10 a.m. on Wednesday morning, none of this happens. So, you know, to walk out of this and really lose just Chris Henry Jr., which I say just, obviously knowing he's a major piece of the puzzle and something that's going to be hard to replace. If you lose just him and Caden Dixon-Wyatt, you learn a couple things. A, the other three receivers are still pretty good. The guy that takes over at wide receiver coach for Ohio State is still going to have Jeremiah Smith and Brandon Ennis and a lot of other really talented players in that room. You learn there's no point in recruiting modern day high school in California anymore. Number one, it's not worth it. Number two or number three or number four, I'm not good at
number
counting.
Number C, I believe.
Number C, like these kids that like Ohio State chose throughout this process, they chose pretty darn smart. They chose correctly. There were guys, again, Jordan Thomas, Jay Timmons, these are all guys that in the last 24 hours leading up to signing day could have easily made some phone calls and forced Ohio State to go to the bargaining table one more time and go to the negotiating table one more time. Sincere Johnson could have done that. Dre Quinn could have done that. Kari Wilder, who is expected to come in and play right away for Ohio State, another kid from California could have done that. So while
DJ saw a lot, uncle is like an assistant at Pittsburgh, like he could have been like, hey, or I'm gonna go be the highest ranked recruit in that class. Nick Lauder didn't have to flip from Louisville like 24 hours after getting an offer. There's a lot of, we're mentioning a lot of in-state guys because that's kind of the foundation of this class, but there's a lot of Indiana, Midwest, Pennsylvania, and that reflects kind of even 27. Like now you see there's Ohio guys, there's Pittsburgh guys, there's Indiana guys, and even I think we've seen more in Chicago for Ohio State going forward, because I think they understand going out to the Catholic schools, the Trinity schools in California isn't all that great when you can go get probably similar caliber players in Chicago.
Yeah, it's a reminder of how things used to be. I mean, it's interesting because the NIL landscape has changed the way you have to recruit, but in some ways it has brought it back to what it used to be, which is the kids that are closer to Ohio. This is we're going to say again, if Legend Bay ends back in this class and you get the Jaquaydon Guilford sign documents, which has not yet been announced by Ohio State for some reason, despite the fact that everything we've heard is that it's been
when the media team can announce it, they will. That's yes. What I was told most recently.
So whatever the holdup there is, we're still waiting. But LSU made a huge push there. I mean, this is a kid who turned down LSU twice and turned down Lane Kiffin twice at two different schools. There's a lot of things to celebrate in this class. It's looking like it should be a 27-man class by the time it's all said and done, provided that things get worked out here with Legend Bay and Jaquaydon Guilford. It's 11 players from Ohio, and it's a class that maybe provides a blueprint for the future. Again, with the expanding rosters, with the lack of a second portal window, Ohio State is going to be much more aggressive in high school recruiting to make sure that they are not caught flat-footed when it comes to roster departures. Because the Buckeyes, despite how good the program is, despite how powerful the program is, how solid the program is, how consistent, how reliable, all of the things that you want to say, they're still going to be hit by the transfer portal on January 2nd, just like everyone else. The difference is Ohio State will hopefully still be playing until 3 weeks later. And so they need to make sure that these high school kids that are coming in are able to come in and be contributors early. So Mick had a story on Letterman Row on Thursday about which players the Buckeyes are expecting to enroll early. And Mick, you break that down. Let's do this. If this is a 27-man class, which again, we're going to assuming that Legend Bay and Jaquaydon Guilford end up being involved in being a part of things, that means 27 guys. How many of them, can you just list the guys that are not enrolling early as far as what you've gleaned, gathered?
Yeah, it's a lengthy list. It'll be Tucker Smith will be the only guy that is not early enrolling based on what I was told.
Okay, so 26 new football players will be arriving at Ohio State probably by the end of December, and those guys are going to help Ohio State get a sense of where the roster needs to go for the 2026 season. That doesn't mean that the Buckeyes aren't going to have all their full complement of players throughout the playoff run, but that's why you see them getting more aggressive and signing bigger classes. I was looking yesterday at some like old signing day numbers, and like I'm looking back at Jim Tressel's classes, and like he had like 14 guys in a class, and you're like, holy moly, can you believe that? And like that's not been the case at Ohio State for a while, but certainly an interesting time. Before we wrap up this episode of Talking Stuff, because I want to make sure it gets published so that I don't seem like an idiot when all of this Chris Henry stuff actually does go down, whatever time it occurs today.
You're never an idiot.
I want a couple. Who's your biggest sleeper in this class? Who's the guy that you think people are not talking enough about?
I'll take Jaquaydon Guilford just because I covered him a good bit before I came over to Letterman Row. I was covering Ohio State. He's a product of Dre Muhammad, who worked with Mylon Graham, who's already at Ohio State. A really respected trainer out of Fort Wayne,
who Brian Austin Graham, got, Austin Mack as well, back in Austin the old days.
Who Brian Harlan got coached with. I don't think that's a relationship that'll just fade. I imagine Dre will continue to bring guys up. Like Jaquaydon's teammate, Maddox Wiles, a really good 2028 fast wide receiver that I imagine we'll see at camp and at visits and whatnot. But I think Jaquaydon was a guy that's always been really talented. The team at Northrop hasn't been good recently. It was really good his senior season. He's a large part of that. He can get open. You mentioned on our Letterman Lounge message board that Carnell Tate's kind of your comp for him, and I think that makes a lot of sense. And truthfully, I like Brock White. I like Jaden Ricketts. I think they have the potential to play at Ohio State. I think Jaquaydon Guilford, I feel confident saying, will be a starter at Ohio State one day. And I think if you sign one of those guys at every position in your recruiting class, you're going to do probably just fine.
Yeah, I mean, at the risk of being too obvious, and the question is, which guys haven't been talked about enough? I think it's Kari Wilder. I mean, the guy is a five-star. Rivals has him as the number 11 overall player in the country, and no one is really talking about him because despite the fact that he committed in May, there's been zero drama around his entire recruitment, and USC and plenty of other schools were trying, and he just didn't buy into it. He wants to play for Larry Johnson. He wants to play for the Buckeyes. I think he's one that people are going to love. Big 6'4", 270-pound defensive end who can play inside as well. Lots of athleticism. I remember talking to people about him back when the Buckeyes offered, and it started because one of the Ohio State staff members was out in California during the evaluation period in the spring, and watched him play tight end and watched him like moss somebody 30 yards down the field and we're like, okay, we can work with that. And he was a guy at the time who was not a five-star number 11 overall player in the country, but he's just dominated his senior season and is starting to play football like at the highest level he's ever played it. And that is a really encouraging thing because Ohio State doesn't want guys that have maxed out. They don't want guys that are not going to get better when they get to Columbus. And he's certainly one of them. I do believe, and I don't know if he'll ever play at Ohio State because of just the way that the room is with Julian and with Tavian St. Clair, but I think Luke Fahey is a steal for the Buckeyes. And if he was 6 foot two instead of 6 foot tall, I think he would be a guy that everyone really, really liked and was really, really high on. So
I love the defensive line class too. If you're, I don't want to cut you off on Fahey, but yeah, like you're good. Getting Kari Wilder, getting Drake Quinn, that's a great defensive end tandem, but getting four really good, like, potential defensive tackles and hoping that Ohio State shouldn't be in a position where they need Tywon to develop like they have this past season for it to be like good depth. Like it's good that that happened, but you have four defensive tackles coming in with Damari Simeon, Emmanuel Ruffin, Darius McKinley, and Jameer Perez that you feel like two of these guys should work out, if not more than two. So if you have that, you're going to have multiple defensive line starters that should be good for years to come. And I think that's awesome. And it's the same kind of thing with offensive line class where you get five guys, four of them from Ohio, that you feel like there's some real, real talent coming in.
Yeah, and I love Drake Quinn. I think that the frame is something that isn't really – he's the closest in this class to, like, the Kenyatta Jackson body type, the really just long, like defensive end that can just engulf an entire side of the offensive line if he puts his wingspan out.
I think the term.
The pterodactyl. I think he's got that sort of ability. I think Kenyatta is probably where I would make that comparison if we're doing that. What player in this class do you think, from your conversations, people that you've spoken with, do you think Ohio State fans are going to view as a fan favorite just because of his personality?
I there's one I was going to say, but I think you've been talking about him a lot, so I'll leave him up to you. I think overall, the one that is already the fan favorite is Blaine Bradford. Like, again, he never visited LSU, never wavered, came up multiple times. And I'll just tell you, because every time I post about Blaine Bradford, it blows up. Everybody loves Blaine Bradford. He's probably going to play year one or be in the mix to play year one with Faheem Dulane. I think Ohio State prioritized him, paid him, like compensated, did everything they could to make sure he understands how valued he is. And that's why he never visited anywhere else. So I think he's going to become a fan favorite if he isn't already, just because of loyalty is kind of rare. And I think Ryan Day talked about that on set. Like, I asked him about it. And Ryan wants to really say something passionate when he kind of just shakes his head or nods when he gets a question, because he doesn't want to talk about all these individuals, but he doesn't want to just go one by one if we can't talk about every single one. But getting the chance to talk about Blaine, I think he really kind of poured out like how he feels about not only Blaine, but his dad, Stacy, and that whole family, about how they've handled it, just the professionalism and how they handled everything.
Yeah. And it's a similar conversation about Sincere Johnson, who I remember back in the spring, Sincere was going through the end part of his recruitment, deciding between Ohio State, Alabama, Penn State, USC, all involved. And we were at the Under Armour camp in Ohio back in April. And he came up to us, and it was really like, for a kid who was going through a super stressful situation and having all of his media members in his ear, trying to get him on camera, like the energy that he had, I was like, holy moly, this kid is a real like personality. Like, and it's so funny because when you see Sincere walking down the tunnel at Ohio Stadium every week, he's got this mean mug on his face and he looks like he's someone that wouldn't want to talk. And then he sees people he acknowledges and likes, and he like lights up and he can't stop himself from kind of being like a nerd. And it's really cool. And I think Sincere Johnson, Mark Pantone brought him up specifically when asked this question by Spencer Holbrook of Letterman Row on Wednesday, like, who's a guy that you think is going to really be a leader? And Sincere and his personality is up there. I know people are going to gravitate to what Mark said about Jay Timmons and the conversation about him being like Jermaine Matthews-esque, who I think as far as the comparison for Jay Timmons, like, that is the comparison. It's not just an off the field comparison. That's the on field comparison as well. That's who Jay Timmons reminds me of. But Sincere is just an awesome kid, and people are going to love getting to know him at Ohio State. So There's a lot we can talk about. We're going to find more ways to break down this class, and hopefully on Talking Stuff over the next few weeks, whether it's with me, whether it's with me and Mick, or whether it's with myself and Austin on the beat or one of our other shows, I want to try to highlight and spotlight some of these kids who have signed with Ohio State before they enroll at the end of December. But until then, this is the end of this episode of Talking Stuff. It's been a wild, wild 36 hours for the Buckeyes. We are trying our best to keep you apprised of everything. Hopefully we're right, because there are two outstanding, and by outstanding, I mean remaining, but also terrific pieces of the recruiting class that have not yet been finalized. And that includes Jaquaden Guilford, who we're still waiting to hear when his letter of whatever it is received and ready to be sent out by Ohio State. And of course, the Legend Bay situation, which will always be an interesting thing. It's going to be one of the most interesting things we've ever seen. So appreciate you for watching. Thanks.